We'll get to the top six at six. Got to start a little heavy this morning for obvious reasons. A weekend of several disturbing stories. At the top of the list is what happened in Syria. Another chemical attack. Michael O'Hanlon, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and one of the great resources we're lucky to have on this show. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. Nice to be with you today.
Appreciate you doing this so early as well. What do we know about this attack, and is it more serious than others we've seen? Not that there needs to be a scorecard.
Right. Well, what we know is not from any direct American on-the-ground monitoring, because we don't have American personnel in that part of Syria. As you know, our special forces and intelligence folks are more out east and maybe in some other places, but not that close to Damascus, as far as I understand things. So what we're seeing is reports from hospitals of people coming in with breathing problems or signs of chemical attack or dead, you know, in some cases, from such symptoms. And so that's pretty compelling, especially when you know that by some estimates, there have been up to 300 chemical attacks previously in this war. And so it's hard to believe that President Assad shows any respect for any red lines.
Does he do Assad do these on his own, or does he clear everything with Russia?
I think Russia could stop him. I don't know if he goes out and asks Russia for permission. But I think we know from Vladimir Putin's history and from the way the Russians handled insurgencies on their own territories, especially in Chechnya, that they believe in a pretty, you know, brass knuckles approach to fighting insurgency. In other words, punish the population that might have some sympathy or might harbor any suspected insurgents. And that's essentially what Assad does. And we know that Russia essentially endorses that. And Russian aircraft have at times, probably not with chemical weapons, but been involved in, you know, these kinds of attacks against civilian neighborhoods. At some point, it doesn't even matter that much whether it's a chemical attack or, you know, traditional ordnance. If it's being used in against an apartment building or, you know, a market or something like that, then the intent is to kill civilians. And Russia's certainly been part of that.
There was a lot of talk this weekend about how chemical weapons have been absolutely forbidden since the end of World War One, and for a war in which we've seen hospitals attacked over and over again and doctors and nurses killed. There's no standards here, right?
There aren't. But again, and I'm glad you're emphasizing the chemical part of this, it's crucial, but 98 to 99% of all the fatalities in this war have been from traditional ordnance or small arms fire or artillery, conventional weapons. And again, what's really been notable is how many of the casualties have been against innocent civilians.
Right.
And it's not just the 500,000 dead, which is more than half of the Rwanda genocide, although it's been over a slower period of time. It's been 7 years. But it's also half the country's population being pushed out of their houses and out of their neighborhoods. So about 5 million are refugees abroad. About 7 million have been pushed to one part of the country or another, not living in their homes, not sending kids to school, not able in general to hold down work. This whole generation of young Syrians is essentially being deprived of a fair start to life, which is not just a humanitarian tragedy. It also sets them up very badly for their adult lives and therefore potentially increases the risks of terrorism.
Michael, Russia's blaming Israel for the strikes on the Syrian airbase. I'm curious, Israel's response, and at this point, should the United States intervene?
Well, I think Israel knows what it's doing, and Israel has decided that it's got to intensify its role, partly because our role has been so ineffective over 7 years, and we haven't managed to prevent Iran and Hezbollah from entrenching themselves in western Syria, very close to Israel, and very close to Lebanon, where, of course, Hezbollah is based. So for those reasons, Israel feels it has to not just prevent specific attacks against Israel, but also prevent arms shipments coming through that part of the territory headed to Lebanon, and also prevent Iran and Hezbollah from setting up any kind of large bases with stockpiles of weaponry that could, over time, be sent to Hezbollah. I doubt very much that Israel can succeed in this comprehensively because, you know, there's just too much Iranian presence in that part of Syria. But I think Israel sending a message that if we see something big, we're going to act. And I think the United States, you know, has to essentially tolerate that. We need a much more comprehensive strategy ourselves rather than just saying that because ISIS is temporarily partially defeated that we're going to come home. I think that's a big mistake.
Do you anticipate us doing anything on our own this week?
I wouldn't be surprised, although it raises the question to what end, beyond just, you know, taking away a little bit more of President Assad's Air Force. We took about almost a fifth of it out of action last year after that chemical attack, and those were in the early months of the Trump presidency. I supported that raid, partly because, you know, red lines have to mean something.
Right.
But the enforcement didn't really do anything to change the dynamics of the war, and it didn't even prevent these subsequent chemical attacks. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we take out 10 more percent of the Syrian Air Force, but you have to ask, what's the end game? And I think the end game here has to be a broader strategy than President Trump seems willing to consider so far. We're going to have to stay in this thing with a small U.S. presence for the long haul, because otherwise you're giving up the parts of the country that are currently occupied by our allies, and ultimately there's only a couple of potential actors who could replace them: Assad, Hezbollah, or ISIS 2.0. And I don't think we want any of those things to happen.
Talking to Michael O'Hanlon, Brookings Institution. We'll let you go in just a second here, but the politics of this don't matter when it comes to kids' lives and civilians' lives being killed this way, but they do matter because words matter on both sides of the globe. And there's a lot of emphasis being put on the fact that Obama failed with his red line and Trump made the whole thing worse and maybe set this up with saying we're going to pull out of Syria early. My question is, what is the upside for the Assad side to rile up the United States in this?
Well, I don't think Assad's deliberately trying to provoke us, although he's certainly having that effect. And I'm glad that you're highlighting this on your show, and I think all Americans should be thinking about it. But Assad has pretty much taken our measure and decided we don't want to get more involved. And he also wants to win the war. You know, the place where these atrocities happened is right next to the main city center of Damascus, his capital city. And he thinks there are still a number of insurgents there, and he's right about that. And he thinks that the way to defeat them is to annihilate the neighborhoods in which they live. And, of course, he's brutally and tragically wrong about that, and he's a monster for the way he's fighting this war. But he's figured out that neither President Obama nor President Trump wanted to do much, really, in the end to stop him. Now, President Trump still has the chance to reconsider. I don't believe that it's realistic to overthrow Assad militarily. I don't think any American wants to get into another big war in the Middle East. But there are a number of things we can do in the country's more remote regions to protect our allies, to help them stabilize their own sectors where they control things, to begin to reconstruct and let refugees come home. And then over time, we got to figure out a way to coax Assad out of power. But it's going to take a while.
I really appreciate it. Thanks again for jumping on, and I'll let the news networks fight over you now.
It's nice talking with you. Have a great day.
Michael O'Hanlon, who you see all the time on CNN, MSNBC. Everybody wants him, and for good reason. He knows what he's talking about.